everybody. Welcome to the Apologetics Canada podcast. This is Steve Kim, and I'm in the studio here with Andy Steiger.
I'm here.
And you might have noticed that Chris is missing.
He's not here.
No. We got a text message, though, that he arrived.
The eagle has landed.
Yep, that's exactly what he said to me.
In Ontario. So he made it safely. Thank you all for your prayers for him, and we want to continue to pray for him and pray that God would bless his ministry out there.
Yeah. Shout out to you, Chris and Sarah. I hope you have a good new start to your lives.
Yeah, miss you guys. That means then that we have a hole here at Apologetics Canada that needs filling.
It's pretty big. You've got to fill Chris's battles.
Filling Chris's shoes. And so if you're interested in working with Apologetics Canada, we would encourage you to send your resume to info@apologeticscanada.com. Specifically, our desire is to help place people into pastoral ministry. So if you are looking at becoming a pastor, what, you know, youth, worship, lead, whatever, women's ministry, like we don't have a specific pastoral position that we're thinking of, or children's ministry for that matter, we would encourage you to apply. It's an opportunity to get job experience. It's an opportunity to do some schooling. It's an opportunity to hang out with us, get some cultural engagement. And our desire is then to help eventually transition you into a pastoral ministry. So we would be helping you to accomplish that.
Yeah, and the position will remain open until it's filled. So just send us your resume whenever you can, info@apologeticscanada.com, and we'll get it going, I guess.
And on our website, I think we'll have the job posting for all the details. I don't know if we've placed it there yet, but we will.
No, it'll go possible.
Yeah. Okay, great.
All right. So before we jump into our topic today, you found something interesting.
Yeah, I was flipping through the news, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but there was this Dutchman that fell in love with a girl online from China. So he decides to fly out to China, and he goes to the airport waiting for her and ends up waiting there 10 days until he's so exhausted and sick that he has to be wheeled out and taken to a hospital.
Yikes.
That takes lovesick to a whole nother level, Steve.
That's, I think, what was it from on CNN?
Yeah, I found that.
I think they were saying it's 5,400 miles or whatever, or 8,700 kilometers from.
It's a long ways.
Oh, man. It's like.
But the part that gets me is I just don't. Okay, first of all, I was confused. Let me just be honest. When I was reading the article, because I'm like, what on earth? What individual stays 10 days in an airport? I can't even stay 10 hours in an airport. 10 minutes is too long. You know, 10 days in an airport, like waiting for a girl. And then I saw a picture of him. And then I was like, oh, okay, I think I see what's going on here. He doesn't look to me like he's all together there.
Yeah.
Like, I think we're talking about there's got to be some sort of like issue going on here.
I didn't want to judge him, but I so was judging him. I'm going to,
You're going to need to go and.
I will go into the confessional booth. Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned.
What about when you first met your wife, did you experience lovesickness, Steve?
Yes, lovesick as in like she became a really huge part in my mental space. And so there was school, there was work, and then there was Shrina, right? That's all there was to it because I was just,
Oh, I was the same way. I had a picture of Nancy that I carried with me wherever I went and I'd show people. And be like, you see that girl? They're like, I'm like, I like that girl.
Here's the question, though, Andy.
Yeah.
Would you have waited for her for 10 days at an airport?
Well, see, I'm pretty convinced that that's what crazy people do, Steve. Or people that, I guess that's some serious, but you know what? To be honest, though, some people do some pretty crazy stuff, you know, when they're lovesick.
Yeah.
And we'll travel some pretty huge distances. I remember. Actually, because Nancy and I were in a long-distance relationship there with me down in Portland and her up here and me traveling up here all the time. Plus, this is how bad it was, Steve. We had a I had a pink hippo, like little teddy bear thing that Nancy had given to me, and then and she had sprayed her perfume on it. And so like I would like snuggle up to this like every night when I go to bed, and I would sniff it, Steve.
I've seen some bizarre things, but man,
I feel like I can't really point my finger at this man at the airport any longer.
No.
And to be fair, by the way, if you see a picture of him, it looks like he didn't eat or anything for those 10 days.
Yeah.
Like he looks in a bad way. Like,
yeah.
I'm pretty sure he just sat there for 10 days and wasted away or something. At any rate.
Yeah, but isn't that true though? When we are lovesick, we do crazy things, especially, you know, like travel long distances to see somebody or surprise somebody, or, you know,
or even lose your appetite. I remember the first time I went on a date with Nancy, I couldn't even eat.
Yeah. And so sometimes it makes me wonder, you know, like, is that just all chemical reaction? Like some people say it is. Like, I'm of the opinion now, a friend of mine told me this, I think years ago, like when I was still studying at Columbia Bible College, but a friend of mine just kind of in a passing remark said, you know, if you don't believe in love, just go to the airport. You know what I mean? And just the other day, I went to the airport to pick up my family who was just coming home from my in-laws. And I mean, the feeling is real.
Yeah, as all these people are waiting with anticipation for these planes to unload and you know, embracing each other without question. I mean, plus I would say, and I think you'd agree with me, if you ever question love, once you have kids, any question that you have about whether or not love is real is gone.
I've heard a number of stories from mothers who used to be atheist, and then they had a child, and as they were holding their newborn child in their arms, they said, this is real, this love is real, and my atheism can't explain it other than it's just a chemical reaction, but I see that it's more than just chemical reaction. So there's food for thought there.
Well, I guess, you know, we can even try to segue from that to the ethics of whatever there may be there. We want to transition into a fairly controversial subject that's been trending on the news.
Yeah.
A well-known theologian by the name of Wayne Grudem, who's a theologian, and I didn't know this, that he's also an ethicist.
Yeah, that was a first for me. He actually teaches ethics.
Yeah, do you know where he teaches? I don't know where he teaches.
That I don't remember either. But I mean, in Christian circles, especially in the evangelical world, he's considered as something of an elder, right? Like he's really looked up to. He's the guy who wrote that very popular systematic theology book.
He's like the new theologian from Regent.
J.I. Packer.
Yeah, he's the new Packer.
So yeah, he wrote a piece on townhall.com, a conservative news website.
Is that what he wrote it for? Because I saw that it was on his own website.
Was it? Well, it was definitely on townhall.com. I'm sure he put it on his own website too, but that's where I saw it, was on townhall.com, a conservative news website. And I think the title was something like something to the effect that voting for Donald Trump is a morally good choice, and he kind of defends that position in the article. Now, before we get into this any farther, just a disclaimer there. We're not promoting any political candidate here. We're just talking about the ethics behind all of this, right? So we're not saying vote for Trump or Clinton. I mean, we're not trying to promote any particular candidate here.
Man, this is interesting. Grudem has a BA in economics from Harvard University. And an MDiv and a DD. Do you know what a DD is?
Doctor of Divinity, probably.
From Westminster Theological Seminary. I've never seen it put that way. Normally they write it out.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find out where he teaches.
We'll find that.
Oh, wait. Trinity Evangelical Divinity School.
That's a pretty significant school there.
I don't know if he's still there, but he definitely taught there.
That's where, like, D.A. Carson taught, or I think he still teaches there. Bill Craig went there. Bart Ehrman went there. That's a really significant school.
It's a great school. Mm-hmm. Now, so it's interesting that he decides he's going to weigh in on this topic that a lot of Americans are struggling with. I know, you know, with my family down in the U.S. are really struggling. I mean, what do you do? And a lot of my friends, you know, what do you do when you have two candidates that you hate?
Yeah.
Right? And so for the first time, people are legitimately looking at going to a third party, or they just don't even know if they should vote at all.
At all, right.
And they're really struggling. And what I get from Wayne Grudem, and I think is interesting, is he's had so many friends come up to him and saying the same thing, you know, what should I do, that he decided that he would write an article on this and that he would help people to think through it from kind of a logical, ethical framework, and ultimately concludes that the morally right decision or good decision would be to vote for Trump.
Yeah, as far as he's concerned, he thinks that's the best way to go.
What do you think about that, Steve?
I think he does make some good points. I mean, I don't like Donald Trump at all. I mean, I've seen you might have seen this meme before. It's the picture of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, their mugshots side by side. And then somebody took it and then they did this, they photoshopped it. So they're Batman villains, right? So you have Hillary Clinton, who's Two-Face now, and Donald Trump, who's Joker, right? And I think in a lot of ways that kind of encapsulates what a lot of people are kind of feeling and thinking at this point. You have somebody who seems really hypocritical and corrupt, like Hillary Clinton, because of the whole, you know, email scandal and everything. And then there's somebody like Donald Trump, who for a lot of people is just really unpredictable. Like, he just seems to do whatever he wants. And so I don't like the man personally, but in some ways I resonate with Wayne Grudem in the sense that, because one of the points that he makes is, imagine what would happen if Hillary Clinton got into power. From his conservative standpoint, he's afraid that if Hillary Clinton gets into power, she gets to appoint Supreme Court justices who will very likely be as liberal as she is, if not more.
I think for a lot of people, by the way, who were writing on this article, like, there was a number of theologians and different evangelicals who've kind of weighed in on what Grudem said. That's probably the one area that they thought that he made the best argument.
Yeah.
Is that right now that we have a number in the U.S., they have a number of judges that are old.
Very old.
Yeah. Like 83.
Yeah.
And have had colon cancer.
Ginsburg, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that most likely are going to expire soon, is his argument.
Yeah. And then if once they are appointed, they get to stay there till they, I mean, expire. Like, they pass on, basically. Like Scalia, who just recently passed on, a very conservative judge. So there is a vacancy there already. And then there are a number of really old Supreme Court justices. And if they are, so if Hillary Clinton gets into power and she gets to pick who goes there, that's a bit of a problem. Now, the other side of the argument says, well, I think you're overblowing the case a bit, because you have the Congress, right? And they can sort of, there are checks and balances, so Hillary Clinton can't just pick whoever she wants. So likely she'll have to pick somebody a little bit more moderate than a lot of what a lot of people are thinking, a lot of conservatives are concerned about. And so, but even so, even the moderate ones, I mean, the way things are going down in the States on some of the social issues, I mean, a lot of conservative people of the conservative persuasion politically are concerned about it. Like, you know, the status on issues like abortion, euthanasia, same-sex marriage, and all that kind of stuff. And they're concerned that further harm is going to be done in that way.
Well, I think that too would probably be one of my pushbacks on Wayne Grudem's article, is that he, I think, in some ways tries to paint Trump into a rosier light than is actually true. It also assumes that Trump is going to keep his word.
Right, which is
It assumes that, you know, it assumes a number of things about Trump. It assumes that a lot of his language is hyperbole, or that a lot of his, you know, language is going to tone down when he becomes president, that he's not going to be as vindictive as he currently is. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of those kind of things where you're like, well, how do we know that's the case? I mean, I know this was some of the pushback people gave to his article with regards to Clinton. Well, I mean, how do you know that Clinton's going to do these other things? Now, it's likely that she will. And then some people also just push back on just the whole democratic process. But the thing that I thought was interesting, because some Canadians are probably listening to this going, you know, we're in Canada. Why are we talking about American politics? But I think what Grudem is bringing up, though, is an important topic. How do you make an ethical decision when it's complicated?
Right.
And I think that that's what we're looking at with this election, is that it's incredibly complicated on numerous fronts. On the one hand, I think evangelicals got to come to grips with the fact that the Republican Party nominated this as their candidate. He was elected. It's not like he forced his way in there. Like this I think also tells us something about where culture's at. I honestly think that Trump and his momentum speaks volumes to what's going on in our culture.
Right. And part of the problem too is that the people who actually voted Trump into his place as a Republican nominee, there was this New York Times article just, I think, released just the other day or whatever, saying that it's only really the 9% of the whole population, 9% of the whole population elected Donald Trump as the Republican nominee. So they broke it down into this chart, and at the top you have a big section, and these are children or felons or illegal immigrants or whatever, people who don't have the voting rights. And then the next big chunk, pretty significant, are people who don't vote. And then the next big chunk are people who didn't vote in the primaries but will likely vote in the actual election. And then at the bottom, comparatively pretty small, are people who actually voted in the primaries. And out of those, there's a small section on each side that voted for Trump and voted for Clinton to be the respective nominees. And so I think that article to me highlights the idea, because there often people say, well, do we need to choose the lesser of the two evils? You know, what about the third option, not choosing at all? And I guess in a sense, when you don't act, you are in a sense acting in favor of whatever negative outcome that you don't want to have. So I think that's part of the challenge.
And that was also Grudem's one of Grudem's arguments is that there's a number of people that want to vote third party, which ultimately he would say is a vote for Clinton.
Hillary, yeah.
So
that's a bit of a problem, I guess. So in this case,
you're gonna have so what you have is an ethical dilemma,
right?
Where you have to make a decision, and no matter how you vote, even if you don't vote, or even if you vote for third party, he's arguing it's between Clinton and Trump.
Right.
You're going to have to make your choice.
And I think this is the challenging part, right? Because it at this point, this thing comes down to utilitarian ethics, right? So which one will do less harm, or which one will do greater harm? And so what Wayne Grudem is arguing is that if Hillary Clinton gets into power, there will be more harm than if Donald Trump were to get into power.
Thus, it's morally good.
Morally good, or at least it's the right thing to do.
But he argues it's morally good.
Does he?
Yeah.
Is that what it says?
Yeah. Okay. Morally good to vote for Trump. And I think that also was something that, you know, clearly people weren't ecstatic about.
Yeah. And I never thought I would see those words together in a single sentence, right? That it's morally good to vote for Donald Trump. But I guess that's the challenge of utilitarian ethics, is that
See, the article that he wrote, too, even in the town hall, it's called Why Voting for Donald Trump is a Morally Good Choice.
Okay, so that's what he did say. Okay. But that's the challenge, isn't it, with utilitarian ethics, is that you kind of have to do this moral calculus, and you have to take into account a number of, like, almost too numerous to count, like, different factors that go into this and how this thing kind of pans out, and what it's going to look like down the road and all of that stuff. In a sense, utilitarian ethics fails precisely because of this, right? You have to look way into the future. Well, you might have something that brings about a short-term good that might be even far more destructive than if you had voted differently, right? Like, just I'm thinking like centuries down the road, maybe even, who knows? And at the end of the day, we just don't have the cognitive abilities to be able to do that kind of moral calculus. And I find that a lot of people, including myself, are caught in this jam of doing moral calculus, and we're like, well, we can't really. So I think a lot of people tend to, I'm more leaning, I haven't really, I mean, I'm not American even, but I'm trying to kind of put myself in your shoes and thinking, okay, well, if I were American, who would I vote for? I think that's what a lot of Canadians doing already. But I'm thinking, okay, well, I'm leaning more towards voting for Trump, not necessarily because I want to vote for Trump, but I don't want Hillary Clinton personally to get into power.
I know for you too, this is a bigger issue with regards to, particularly with the abortion aspect, right, of her ethics and her desire from, now I think that this is mainly speculation, but mm-hmm. but she has shown that she leans towards overruling different laws that have been put in place, such as, right, the government not funding mm-hmm. abortion and a number of other.
Religious liberty would be a huge issue, because once she starts pushing those sorts of things now,
Or late-term abortion.
Right. Or even partial birth abortion, which I consider to be complete infanticide. Like, infanticide full stop, actually. I mean, even abortion, if you actually follow its logic to its logical conclusion, you would have to agree that, yeah, it is infanticide, even though the baby is not born yet.
But this is the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because it's assuming that Trump... And this is the problem that I have, right? Because mm-hmm. it's just assuming that he will do what you want him to do. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know
that's
if he said
part.
What yeah. he would do with regards to abortion. Mm-hmm. From anything you've read, have you even heard what he...
Yeah, it's just... what I've seen is a lot of secondhand reports saying that he's kind of sticking to the pro-life.
That's everything that any, like, what Grudem even was saying, look, sounded a whole lot like just secondhand stuff.
But I also have seen him seeing, like, articles and videos where he makes conflicting statements, where, you know, like, I think in an interview back in 1998 or something like that, 99, where he says, I'm pro-choice in every aspect of the word. Now,
exactly.
Granted, that's a long time ago, and he may have changed his mind now, especially now that he is thinking of leading a whole nation, right? And he may have changed his mind on this topic. But it does unsettle me a bit, you know, like how much of this is genuine. I think that's the biggest challenge for many of us. Okay, so if one were to vote for Donald Trump, how do you know that he is, especially in the face of all of these policies that he seems to have gone, you know, flip-flop kind of thing, like, how do you trust him to keep his word?
So, I mean, those are some tough, mm-hmm. tough decisions to make, some ethical decisions you're going to have to weigh. Mm-hmm. However, I thought there's been some interesting pushback to Wayne Grudem's article that I mm-hmm. thought was interesting from a Christian perspective. And that is that we're seeing a growing movement of, you know, Christianity that wants to, or Christians, I should say, that want to use Christianity as an instrument, if you will, to mm-hmm. to of political maneuvering, so that you're you know, using Christians, and that Christians should work in a way that they're kind of steering, you know, the nation or whatever it might mm-hmm. be, or pushing back to a lot of the persecution that I think a lot of Christians mm-hmm. feel. And so there's this confliction in Christians, like, is that what Christianity is about? Mm-hmm. You know, is Christianity a political, you know, tool to move right. the direction of the mm-hmm. of the nation?
Right.
Or is Christianity about something else, i.e. relationship
right.
with Christ and mm-hmm. And living the Christian life?
Right. I think you can look at it in a couple different ways. One is, if you look at what Jesus has done, he didn't come as a political king and try to change things from top down, right? Legislate to control people's behavior, but he did it backwards, or he did it bottom up. He came and changes people's hearts in such a way that it would change an entire empire, right? So I think, and on the one hand, yes, I would agree with that sentiment, you know, like we should go out there and change people's minds and do it from bottom up rather than try to maneuver political, you know, use Christianity as a political tool. On the other hand, I think as Christians and also as citizens of a particular country, you know, like whether it's American or Canadian or Korean or whatever, you have been given a certain right to speak into that culture, right? And I don't think politics is the best way to change people's hearts, but that doesn't mean that politics changes nothing.
Right. And I think the other thing too, though, that I think about is we're dealing with more than just politics. Mm-hmm. These policies have real life implications, particularly exactly. as we were just discussing the yeah. life of the unborn.
Right. And for me, that's the huge thing. One of the reasons I actually, throughout most of my life, I've been very apathetic to politics, precisely because I thought, well, politics and Christianity just don't mix. And part of it is some of my training at an Anabaptist institution, right, that tends to kind of separate the church and the state in a kind of a pretty radical way. I have a lot of friends that are like that. And so I tended to be very apathetic. I was all about changing people's hearts so that cultures will change. But the more I kind of thought about politics, the more I came to the realization that this actually is politics isn't just a matter of policies. It's a matter of policies that have moral implications. I guess that's where I was stopping short, because I thought politics equals, well, just policies. But I didn't really think any further than that. It has moral implications, like the life of the unborn or life of people who are at the end of their lives, like euthanasia and all of that kind of stuff, right? And
is something that Canadians are dealing with.
Yeah, especially in our culture with the whole Bill C-14 passing and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it has real life implications.
The other thing too is, to get back to this persecution part, I mean, because this was also part of Grudem's argument, mm-hmm. is there's a bill that has, you know, I think it's gone through the Senate, with regards to Christian yeah. schools and getting government funding
SB
or government loans.
Yeah, SB 1146 in California, which basically says if the schools in California don't conform to the certain standards that the state has, then they're going to cut
specifically
funding.
their moral conduct, their right. code of conduct, say in the university,
right.
where it may say that you can't engage in same-sex relationships,
right.
for example.
Like physical intimate relationships, right?
Right. Then the government would say, well, if that's your policy, well, then we're not going to provide student loans to the students that want to yeah. go to that school.
So in effect, I mean, it doesn't...
It technically doesn't affect the university. Yeah.
But
it indirectly does.
Yeah, but...
It'll indirectly destroy the university.
Right. And it's not just Christian universities either, right? I mean, this would apply to any organization that doesn't conform to what the state has to say with respect to, say, LGBT.
It's pretty tricky standards. Stuff, because ultimately now the state mm-hmm. becomes the legislator of morality,
right?
Indirectly, mm-hmm. and I think that this is. something that's weighing on a lot of Christians, mm-hmm. is this is part of that persecution that I was talking about that I think a lot of Christians feel, mm-hmm. both in the United States and Canada, you know, particularly in the West, where we feel more and more marginalized, mm-hmm. more and more controlled, like we have less and less of a voice. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's the part that really makes this issue so challenging right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting. In the past, we used to preach, you know, the church experienced persecution, or we would have to look abroad to some place like Laos or something and talk mm-hmm. about, or China, you know, talk about persecution over there. Mm-hmm. But more and more, I think that we're starting to realize that persecution has come to the West,
right?
And that it's come in a specific way.
Right. It has its own flavor.
Yeah, it's its own flavor, and that Christians are trying to grapple with how do they respond mm-hmm. to persecution.
Now, I've heard some people say things like, well, you know, it's not really persecution, you know, because the kind of persecution that they have in mind are like people that you've come across, pastors that you've come across in Thailand, you know, on the borders of Thailand and Laos, right?
Right.
And the kinds of things that they went through, how they were jailed, and the biggest thing that helped them was a plastic bag, because then, you know, they could do their business in it and keep it.
Yeah, they could go to the bathroom in a plastic bag. So we would say that's extreme persecution for sure, but I think that, I guess that's part of where people are concerned, is they just feel that this is momentum mm-hmm. towards more and more persecution.
Yeah.
On those who are not just Christian, right. but religious in general, but Christians in particular.
And I'm thinking, if you don't think this is persecution, then you just need to talk to the owners of the cake shop, for example, or the photographer who's now out of business because, you know, she's slapped with a huge fine in such a way that it basically destroyed her business and the kind of implications that it has.
Well, this was one of the arguments that Grudem makes as well, is Hobby Lobby. Right. For example, and needing to go all the way to the Supreme Court mm-hmm. with whether or not they have to provide, I believe it's a drug for
abortifacients. So drugs that will cause abortions.
Abortions.
Yeah.
So that currently they don't have to provide that. Mm-hmm. But that under Clinton, that could change.
That could very well change.
And then ultimately Hobby Lobby, which has 23,000 employees, mm-hmm. said, well, then we're going to close all of our businesses if that's what happens. Mm-hmm. So that's that tension mm-hmm. that I think that we feel. And it's not just in our politics. I find that tension's just in our culture mm-hmm. currently. I mean, even, Steve, when we're on university campuses, mm-hmm. I'm amazed at how much tension and persecution is there with regards to Christians. You know, what, for example, and we got to wrap this up,
right.
but for example, one of the things that you'll often hear is that this is an argument that I hear almost every time I'm on a university campus. Mm-hmm. That is that Christianity has caused all of the evil in the world mm-hmm. and that science, rationality is our savior. And if we could just get rid of religion, then we could usher in a utopian society.
Right.
I can't tell you the number of students I've come across that this is their firm belief. Mm-hmm. And that if we could just achieve this, and this is part of that war of worldviews that's really overarching this whole conversation.
It's almost taken for granted, right? And it's fueling the culture war between, well, I guess there are many factions, but in this case, there's Christianity or any other religion really, for that matter. Although Christianity tends to get singled out. And then there's cultural Marxism on the other side. And I guess in all of this, I want to leave our listeners with a couple of thoughts. One is this whole thing with, you know, the election that's coming up in November down in the States, it is a complex issue. Let's just admit that, acknowledge that, all of us, right? And so what I want to say is people will try to do their best. I mean, nobody goes out there thinking, okay, you know, I'm going to exercise my voting rights to destroy the country today. Nobody's thinking that. Everybody wants to do what they think is the best and what they think is the most moral thing they can do for the country and for everyone else in the country. I guess I just want to encourage our listeners, please be gracious to the people around you, because we all have very difficult choices to make. So if somebody says, you know, in my clear conscience, like I have to vote for Hillary Clinton, that let that person exercise that voting right. And if somebody says, I'm going to vote for Trump because I think that's the best thing, let that person do that. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't speak up against what you think is immoral, but do it in a way that's charitable.
I think the same thing's true with Grudem's article.
Mm-hmm.
I think respecting the fact that he came out and made an argument, he may disagree with the argument, but he's still a brother in Christ.
Right. I mean, I've seen somebody say, just a quick comment, just one-liner, this is a beautifully written delusion. Okay, that sort of a comment doesn't help you get anywhere. It's not charitable, it's not helpful in any way. Don't do that sort of thing. Engage substantively and be charitable in doing so, I would think. And yes, Wayne Grudem is still a brother in Christ. You may think that he's mistaken, but please treat him like a human being, or anybody else for that matter who wants to vote one way or the other. So, well, I think we'll wrap it up there. Well, thank you for joining us, listeners. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll be back next week with more stuff to think about.